Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
Welcome along to Friday Night Racing. It's a very wet weekend in Dublin. We've had loads of rain in Britain. We seem to have actually managed to avoid the worst of it over here, but more rain to come, and maybe the summer isn't going to come at all this year. But it's Friday Night Racing with goracing.ie, and we have a special guest today along with John Duggan, who's with me again for the second week running. It's young trainer Michael O'Callaghan. How are you, Michael?
Not too bad, Johnny.
You got lost on the way, did you?
I did. As you said on the way in, can't take a carry man out of Kerry. Lifted a bit late.
Yeah.
But just made it. Grand.
Welcome to the Towers.
The Towers, yeah. Does he might not quite live up to Paul Carberry, but we have to give him time, I suppose.
It's a different sport, isn't it?
It is.
He jumps in the flat anyway. So I'm interested in learning about... I asked Michael off air, so who did you, apprentice with? Who did you, learn your trade from? And he said, myself. How do you do it yourself?
I didn't. The standard sort of training school for trainers would be to be assistant to other trainers and stuff like that. And I didn't come that sort of path into racing. But plenty of mistakes. Starting off with a few horses, with a couple of horses, and I raced bikes as a teenager. Cycling was my sport, and.
How did you get into that, actually?
Dad was big into cycling when I was growing up. Mm. And like every young lad, your dad's kind of your superhero. So I wanted to do what he was doing and got into cycling and competed at it for a couple of years. But
where were you cycling?
Mostly in Munster.
Competitively?
Yeah, badly. But yeah. Taught myself a lot about training and stuff like that. And, then got into racing and went to work for Tom Cooper as a young lad in all my holidays and school holidays. And after that, I went to work in Coolmore. I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do at that stage, but I wanted to work in racing. I was kind of leaning towards the kind of stud career because I went to work for Coolmore and spent a couple of seasons there and then went to the Irish National Stud through the course there. And then in that sort of time, I kind of slowly started... leaning towards thinking maybe I'd want to train. And spent a good few mornings maybe with James Burns and the Gallop. He was training at the time. Mm. And a few mornings with Paul Deegan as well for over a course of a summer or two. But never really worked for them, never was a pupil assistant or anything like that. So I picked up a little bit there and kind of forgot about training for a while and started, rented a stud farm out in Rathangan at about 20 years of age.
That's pretty mad when you think about it. 20 years of age renting a stud farm.
Yeah, young and naive and a bit stupid, but straight into the deep end. But started to buy and sell a couple of foals to yearlings, and that only went okay. And then got left with a couple of yearlings, so I had to breeze them. And got on well with the breezers. Got on quite well, and enjoyed training 2 year olds. For the breeze up. And then after a couple of seasons, it inevitably happens, got left with a couple of 2 year olds and not really being able to afford to put them into training. To train myself. And that went well. During that time, we acquired a filly called Bogini, and she was my first winner. She won 3 in a row. That was 2012. My first winner was in England, actually, in Bath.
Bath, where they don't water.
Mm. Bath, where they don't water, yeah.
You were very young then, you were only 23 or 4 starting off, yeah?
Yeah, that's all. And that was 2012, so what's that, 7 years ago, so I was 23.
Just going back to Kerry then, when you were back in Kerry, what does a young person of your ilk, what do you expect to do when you're from Kerry? You expect to play football or what?
Yeah, you probably are. You're kind of... There's not much when you're at home in Kerry. The world outside of Kerry is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, you don't have a passport outside of Kerry.
No,
you've gone to Listowel as a young lad to the meeting there, the Harvest Festival.
Yeah, mainly Tralee. Tralee was I'm from Tralee, and the race meeting there was a big thing growing up. It was a couple of miles up the road from my nan and granddad's house, and we used to go there. And then when I went to work for Tom Cooper, I led up my first winner in Tralee for Tom, and I got bitten by the bug very early. Well, at about 16, 17, I remember.
Is that around the time of Total Enjoyment?
Yeah, that's what got me into it, really. That's what got me hooked.
Cheltenham Bumper winner.
Yeah, she won the Cheltenham Bumper when I was just starting to get an interest in racing. And Dad was never really into racing either, but he used to follow good racing like that. And his dad was used to have a bet at Lucky 15 most days since he retired. And my job was going to down to the shop in Oaklands and getting him the Evening Echo so he could look at the decks and do his Lucky 15 for the next day. And when Total Enjoyment won the Champion Bumper, that's really what got me interested. At that stage, I had been riding ponies, is all. We didn't have any. We lived in town and we didn't have any.
Were you actually a townie?
I was a townie, yeah. We lived in town and grew up in town, and started riding ponies out about 3 or 4 miles out of town, and used to cycle out there. And when Total Enjoyment won the Champion Bumper, I kind of wanted to get into racing. And a friend of Mom's, her brother was head lad for Tom Cooper. And I asked the mother to ask him, could I...
Were you afraid to ask Tom yourself?
I was a little bit, yeah. We lived in the same house in the estate as Tom. He only lived 100 yards away.
He often has a long face on him, but he's a very likeable fella.
Yeah, he is very likeable. Yeah. He's fair that the weight of the world was on his shoulders, but...
Do you see much of Brian in him, actually?
They're very, very similar.
Yeah, I thought that. Yeah,
very, very similar temperaments.
Just on Tralee as
they're
well.
They're deep thinkers.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're actually nice guys and deep thinkers, and put a bit of pressure on themselves.
Mm. On Tralee itself, I've been to every racetrack in Ireland, but I didn't get to Tralee. And what is it? What's going on there now? And it's obviously sad that it's gone because it was a unique enough racetrack.
Yeah, it's sad for me that it's gone on a selfish sort of note that I've never been able to train a winner at my local track. It's still sitting there idle. I think they're on Pint of Pints and flattened meetings there. But it was during the time of the Celtic Tiger, it was sold off. It was going to be developed.
And they weren't developing for GAA, were they?
There was going to be a sports facility there, yeah, and I think shopping centre and whatever, and it was going to be a big sort of a development, but that fell through. And it's sitting idle.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of sad. If you were to drive past it now, you'd see some of the stands falling down, and it was a great track, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing sadder, I suppose, John, than urban decay like that when you see, and I'd go by the Phoenix Park and even Balldoyle and think it must have been great to go to the races there.
Yeah, I remember my dad got me into racing, and you know, you'd see in the newsprint the Phoenix Park, and I never got to go. Yeah, it's funny, you know, I was like even watching Chernobyl the other day, and going off on a complete tangent here, but which is an amazing documentary, and I was in Russia for 6 weeks last year, and I did see a lot of you know, decay in parts of Russia, and it's sad. Like there's an eerie romanticism about an old a racetrack or a football ground or that kind of thing, like overgrown. And I suppose what it's doing is it's locking in the memories and the ghosts of all those meetings all over the years. It's like railway lines.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about, okay, well, it's the railway line to Kilkee and Clare, where my dad was from, and that kind of thing. So you're almost like you're capturing the past in a ghost like form, and we really should be opening race courses, not closing them.
I know the argument, I suppose, is the locals didn't support it enough.
Yeah, but I don't know. Look, I was a young lad. A small crowd would look like a big crowd to a young lad, but I always thought there was great crowds there.
And it was such a part of the Rose of Tralee Festival.
It was a big part. I remember the Rose of Tralee used to come in a horse-drawn carriage up the track, and it was a big sort of a deal, but there was obviously commercial reasons for it, but like what John was saying, like a track like that, if the walls could talk, there'd be some stories out of the place.
The brief tangent now, but there's obviously talk of a second all-weather track in Ireland as well, so that would be the new track. What's your thought on that?
A new all-weather track would be great. More central, Dundalk is a great facility. It's quite northerly, not for us in the Curragh, but for those lads that are down south into Munster, down into Cork, and even Tipperary and places like that. It's a long way to Dundalk on a Friday night. last race, 9:25, having to head home. And it's not, you know, it's difficult on staff and difficult on everyone that has to travel that length of time. So that's a big reason for it. But another all-weather track in regards to more all-weather racing, I don't know how positive that is.
That's my worry. Is you're diluting the product, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, isn't the all-weather all about, like, first of all, there's two things. It's about having constant racing, like when there's bad weather and bad conditions and on the winter and that kind of thing. But it's also about entertainment. So the whole Dundalk thing, and I was there about a month or two ago for the first time, it's entertainment, it's the meal, it's even staying inside, really. It's kind of like, it's not purely a racing purist experience.
Absolutely.
It's like the dogs, but with racing.
Absolutely. But if you bring a racetrack in that's sort of not about entertainment necessarily, it's a second all-weather track, but it's more about just providing a facility for horses to run with nobody there, and it's like not necessarily in an urban setting, I don't really see that as a forward step. So it'll be interesting to see what's what happens. But let's get back to your early training days anyway. So it happened a bit. I was actually listening to Sheila Lavery. She started training a little bit. I think she was saying she was either pinhooking or she was trying to sell breezes and she couldn't, and she wasn't making a success, so she just started training for a bit out of, I suppose, circumstance. But you obviously got an enjoyment out of it quickly as well.
Yeah, I did. It's the competitor inside you that just you want to win races. To this day I'd be a bad loser. And you have to be, I suppose, to try and just keep improving. But what was the question again?
Well, you started enjoying it at an early stage, and you're an early winner, and then you're very, very young.
Yeah.
And also you were taken over at a time when it wasn't exactly advisable for a lad to get into training, not to mind a fellow who's young, because the economy was still in recession as well.
Yeah, but youthful enthusiasm and a bit of stupidity, I suppose.
How did you learn to grow the operation then?
It just grew organically. The enthusiasm in me wanted more horses and wanted to try and find better horses, and it just kind of grew organically.
Mm. You're talking about 2-year-olds. You deal a lot with Michael. What is it like working with 2-year-olds? Because to me, they're obviously the babies, and they seem quite highly strung and green. Do you need to have kid gloves when you're dealing with 2-year-olds?
Yeah, you do to an extent, but not as much as people would think. I enjoy the 2-year-olds because basically they're a blank canvas. You can teach them the way you want them to be to learn the game. But we predominantly are a 2-year-old yard in that, because we're, in one way, we have to try and be self-sufficient, because we can't rely on owners sending us horses, because it is so so competitive. There's so many trainers out there, it's so tough. And that's probably one of the reasons why I got into training at the time, because I wasn't sort of relying on outside owners to send me horses. We were trying to find 2-year-olds to perform on the track and sell them to survive that way. So we weren't relying on owners as such, but I enjoy 2-year-olds. I couldn't put my finger exactly on why, but I suppose you're looking for the next big thing. You're looking for a star, and we've been very lucky in finding plenty of nice horses from relatively low budgets. And
how do you enjoy that? I think if you're a football manager, it's nearly more enjoyable to say to the chairman, say to you, you've 3 million to spend here. You have to be a bit imaginative, rather than you can spend whatever you want.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Who's the Dele Alli? He was discovered from Milton Keynes and Tottenham beat Liverpool to the signature. Who's the Dele Alli of horses? Is it a bit like, I don't know, Only Fools and Horses, when they eventually win the millions, that you're hoping for that lottery ticket of, you know what, there's one that's been bypassed for whatever reason, or hasn't been seen, or the reading might be a little bit funny, but you just see something in it? Is that the kind of the dream, or is it a bit more prosaic and kind of... No, we just need to go through the stats here. We need to money ball. Okay, what is a good 2-year-old?
Yeah, no, there's no stats at all, really.
Is it feel, is what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, so, I don't know this from Adam, say, if I'm a hurler in the ditch, what are you looking for in a specimen?
The athlete, the physical, because it's the piece of paper, it's that pedigree that makes them expensive. But as a trainer, I can't train a piece of paper. I have to be able to train the athlete, and they have to be well made, they have to be balanced, they have to have plenty of power. To run as 2-year-olds, they have to be quite mature. People getting into racing at the start and getting into buying and selling horses, they think a lot of it is down to how straight their front legs are, the toe in, the toe out, how their knees, this and that. For me, front legs are only for steering. They have to have a good hip, plenty of power, well balanced, and they have to be able to move and walk, and a good looking horse as well. A horse with a great head in them. You rarely see a horse in a winner's enclosure that looks like a donkey. You know, you buy nice horses, and that's where you start, and that's where you can get in at the level where you the chances of competing at stakes level are higher, because you're not going for a pedigree, you're going for a physical, and if you forget about the pedigree, you can buy a horse that can outperform what he's bred to be. Because at the end of the day, there's no law, but...
Well, say Now or Never, right? So Now or Never is by Bushranger, who would have been the next best thing to Poison at that stage, really, after, you know, so much promise about Bushranger, and Bushranger, nobody wanted a Bushranger, and then you got Now or Never. So how did that happen?
Again, at the Breeze Ups, somewhere where we've been very lucky is buying horses at the Breeze Ups, and the Breeze Ups are 2-year-old in training sales. They've been broken by someone else, they're brought to a track, and they breeze over 2 furlongs. So you get to see their action, you get to see them move, you get to listen to how they breed when they're going by you. And that takes away a lot of the guessing, because you can see them galloping, which is, at the end of the day, that's the name of the game. And it was kind of weighing the whole thing up. She actually had a good pedigree on the dam side, but she was by Bushranger, who was complete, as you said, poison. People wouldn't touch her with a barge pole, but just there was something about the filly that she was a very good looking filly. Had she been by something else, was she by Invincible Spirit, she'd have made a couple of hundred thousand, because she was a good, very, very good looking filly.
And you're literally talking 10 or 20 times the price because of fashion, like, as well.
Yeah, it's purely fashion.
Yeah.
Very.
How did she breeze?
She breezed well. She's probably in the top 30 or 40 times out of 150 horses, so she wasn't in the top 1 or 2%, but she was up there. She could move, and she was a lovely filly down the yard, great temperament, and she was relatively cheap in buying horse terms. She was about 35 grand, and she worked out very, very well. She won her maiden in Galway by 7 or 8 lengths, and she was second to a horse that Jim Bulger's called Herald of Dawn in the Futurity. Same day as the debutante, actually, which is a filly's race that she should have been running in, but we said we'd run her in the Futurity because we thought she was very good, but it was a bit of an opportunity. The filly's race probably worked out hotter in the end, and she was second in the Futurity and came out as a 2-year-old and won the Guineas Trial at Leopardstown. Bolted up in it, actually, and Qatar Racing bought her then, and she went on her next start for them. She was third in the Irish 1000 Guineas, and she was after that, she went to Royal Ascot, and she was a good fort in the Coronation. She hit the front of furlong down and just got pegged back.
Where is she now?
She's at stud somewhere for Qatar.
Mm. And just thinking of her, I remember Kieran Fallon riding her in that trial at Leopardstown, and, you know, all the superlatives that he came out with. How did the Kieran Fallon thing? It was such a strange dynamic, because you were very young, and he was probably, what, the guts of 50 at the time.
Yeah.
And this strange sort of relationship developed, but, like, what was it like, you know, a fella that you'd be in awe of, really?
Looking back, it was a bit mad. it was a bit mad, but...
How did it happen?
Gave him a call. He was sitting in, he was over in America, and he was gone quiet, and his career was kind of, he was kind of almost unofficially retired. And got his number and gave him a shout, and and he came over, and lucky enough we had Now or Never to start the whole thing off, and
kind of was Now or Never for him at the time as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's ironic, yeah. But
what was he like?
Nice fella.
Complex.
Yeah. As it turned out, he had his own issues. The surface later that year, they mightn't have surfaced at all if you didn't have Adrian McGoldrick, who's been a saviour to many people in racing.
And just to remind people listening in, Kieran Fallon came out with depression issues, which obviously befell other jockeys, since notably Mark Enright, but Fallon was probably the first one. And I guess it must have been tricky to be around that as well, even though it mightn't have been all that obvious at the time.
Yeah, it was when it came out, it was quite high profile. But in the week or two leading up to it being announced, he just went back into himself a little bit, and you could see that he was under a bit of pressure. And it all worked out well that he got himself sorted out. And you know, anything like that ends well is great. And but it was great to have him in the yard and to learn from him.
He must have been an asset in terms of work riding and that, and as a judge of horses.
Yeah, he was there for 3 or 4 months, and to learn in those 3 or 4 months off him, the amount I learned off him was just watching him. That's what training horses is. A lot of the time, it's observation, and someone like him, he doesn't waste his words. You learn from a man like that with a lot of experience.
Your other high-profile horse, obviously, was Blue de Vega at that time.
Yeah, Blue de Vega, another horse I bought at the Breeze up to Bottom in Gorse Bridge, and won the Killavullen very impressively as a 2-year-old.
Would you encourage people to go to the Breeze up in terms of an experience of watching, I suppose, horses who are a blank canvas go flat out for a couple of furlongs?
It'd be an experience for the racing fan to go and see them, yeah, especially now that they're only out the road in Ferry House for Escort. They were only a couple of weeks ago. And
was there much interest in him when he breezed?
He made 70 grand, 75 grand. So in the grand scheme of things, a little bit, but not a whole lot.
He was by a fashionable stallion.
Yeah, he was by Lope de Vega, but he was a 35 grand yearling. He was bought in Germany. And Roger O'Callaghan, Tally Hostel, who we actually bought Now or Never off as well, they're good producers of horses. And he liked them. The horse had two big buck shins at the time, which are basically sore shins, like a runner gets sore shins or shin splints or whatever. He just had an engine, and took a while to. He didn't run his maiden until August. The Breeze Ups was in May, so it took a while to get him back right. And won his maiden impressively at Nace. Emmett McNamara rode him, and it was quite a hot maiden on the day, but he just turned into a bit of a procession, and we sold him after that, and he won the Killavullen. And again, he was third the same weekend as Now or Never in the 2,000 guineas that
what
weekend.
What kind of a buzz was that to have placed horses in both guineas?
At the time, I didn't appreciate it. I was...
probably sour they didn't win.
Yeah. I was like a bull. Went home early, couldn't talk to me. People coming up to me saying, geez, that was amazing. You know, two placed horses in the guineas. And I see it happened there this year for Paddy Toomey with Foxtrot Live and Decrypt. And I was only saying, I only sat back and thought to myself, you know, what an achievement, and for Paddy to do that. And didn't realise that I had done it myself. I was kind of a bit peeved. But
you'd almost forgotten.
Not that I'd almost forgotten, but at the time, things were happening fast, and I was kind of winning plenty of races, and they were nice horses, and just, you know, didn't appreciate it. Like,
it's strange psychologically if when you're very young, things happen, and they happen easily, and you're obviously you take it for granted. And then when you do have a lull, you kind of start to reflect on things and say, like, I'd love to be back there again and actually appreciate this.
Yeah.
It's not guaranteed.
No, it's not. And at the time, I was kind of, all I wanted was more horses. And
is it obsessive?
Yeah. But I had a bit of a lull then the year after, in 2017. Yeah.
Because you went back to, you're very impressive, since 2014 into this year, which this year is actually your best season yet statistically. You were double figures, which is fair going in the era of Aidan O'Brien to be hitting double figure strike rate. But then you slumped to 5 in 2017.
Yeah. We didn't have the horses, and that's probably the main thing. We had a number of horses, we had plenty of horses, but the quality of horse wasn't there, because I had gone from sourcing all the horses myself on a limited budget, and lucky enough, I was able to select what I wanted and what I could train, and they won plenty of races and high grade races, because to win a maiden in Ireland or be placed in the maiden in Ireland, your horse is well above average. And from that into having the high profile horses with Blue Lavega and Now or Never, I got sent plenty of horses then.
You weren't actually picking them quite as much?
No, I wasn't picking as many at all, very few. I mean, more so relied on the horses being sent. And
some by Qatar, obviously, at that stage then.
Yeah, some by Qatar and some by Sheikh Mohammed bin Khalifa Al Maktoum. But, they're only testing the water as well. They're only giving you their B or C team. And you have to be honest and say that just the horses weren't good enough. But you learn from that. And it's character building, I suppose. And sat back in the winter, 2017, 2018, and said we have to strip it back and go back to what got us to where we were, and concentrate on trying to source the horses myself. And in the last year, it kind of just started to work out. The horses took a bit of time to come to hand. Had patience, which you have to have. Sometimes it can run out, but horses worked out, and we hit on horses like Bruce Wayne and Power of Now and horses like that, and we sold them quite well to Hong Kong, and were able to into the yearling sales then and reinvest that and buy 15 yearlings to go to war with this year.
Can you explain the Hong Kong market to people out there? And was it Geraldine sold a horse for about $500,000 to Hong Kong the other day, I think, that looked, I have to check that now, but it looked another kind of shrewd purchase. But what is the Hong Kong market? Hong Kong is in the news for entirely different reasons at the moment. But the market out there, for what's the particular type of horse that you would like? And I imagine an awful lot of trainers are thinking, I want to train a horse and I want to source a horse that I can sell to Hong Kong, to that various market.
Mm. That's what we're trying to do all the time. But it's extremely difficult, because you have to source the horse that's good enough for Hong Kong. But then they have to pass a very intensive veterinary check as such. They get 36 or 40 x-rays of all their joints, and everything has to be, they basically want to buy a used Ferrari with zero mileage on it as such, because they will pay you for the horses, large amounts of money for the horses, because it's an extremely wealthy country. And the turf club out there, the Hong Kong Jockey Club as it's called, It's Hong Kong is essentially an island, so they're very restrictive on the horses that are let in, and that makes them so valuable, because it's so hard to get horses in there. And
have you raced over there?
Never, no, no.
You haven't been there?
No,
it's
never.
Supposed to be an amazing experience.
Yeah, I'd say that.
So you strip back, and you then went sourcing horses yourself, and such that you must be happy that going back to kind of going back to the blank sheet has worked out for you in that regard. You had two good seasons now. This season is flying.
And
did you have my I'm Superman rated 86 or whatever he was in Leopardstown to start the season?
I mustn't have done a good job on him as a 2-year-old. But it's amazing how horses improve from 2 to 3. I did think a lot of him. If anybody was paying very close attention, they would have seen that he had a Guineas entry going into the winter.
And he walked up in Leopardstown rated in the 80s.
Yeah.
Terrible draw.
Yeah, was he 79 or 80? He was low on it, but he was second or third in the Curragh Maiden, first time out as a 2-year-old. He was drawn in Fox Rock that day in Leopardstown. He was drawn out completely out wide. But he had been working well, and
the word was he was the best handicapped horse in the Curragh.
Was that the word?
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
He was halfway through the race anyway. But he's progressed as well since.
He has. He's improved a lot from 2 to 3, to be fair. We did think he was a very good 2-year-old. Went a bit weak. He had loads of size and scope, and like a big young lad playing sports, they can just go a little bit weak when they start to grow. And we threw him away and brought him back, and he wintered well, and he won that day in Leopardstown, and he went on to Nace and won equally as well at Nace, far higher in the handicap. And then we 6 days later pitched him into the Tetrarch, and it was just a bit soon for him, but he also lost the shoe early on the race, and he had to run the whole race on the one lead, and horses get tired leading on the one lead the whole time. They need to switch leads to quicken in the latter part of the race, and he wasn't able to do that, having pulled a shoe. And he ran a good race and finished fifth, but it was nice to be able to freshen him up and bring him back and run in the guineas, and run in the guineas as a complete outsider. And nothing to prove at all.
No pressure.
No, none.
Oh, he's going to Royal Ascot now.
Yeah, yeah, we'll talk to Michael actually about that in a moment, because he's a four strong team at Royal Ascot. I just want to mention the nominations for the 2019 Irish Godolphin Stud and Stable Staff Awards close on the 24th of June. And there are 10 award categories which carry over 80 grand in prize money. The awards are a brilliant platform to acknowledge and reward all the dedicated staff working around the country. I would encourage all those working in the industry to nominate your friend and colleagues. Obviously, nominate them on merit as well. And nominations can be made online at studandstablestaffawards.ie. Have you been at the Stud and Stable Staff Awards night out? Good old night out?
Yeah, yeah. Good night out. We were there last year. My wife Siobhan's friend Emma was nominated for one, and we got the night out in a hotel in Meath somewhere, and it was very, very well done, and very important in the industry, because we were talking about horses there and results and stats and this and that, and none of those for us would be possible without the staff.
Who are your staff and in your principal staff?
Yeah, John Bailey is the head man, and he does a great job. He's worked very, very hard, very, very dedicated. Wouldn't be able to do it without a great team of staff like that. My wife Siobhan is equally as dedicated and works as hard, and all the rest of the lads, riders, Ian Queeley.
Ian Queeley's with you.
Ian Queeley, who used to ride for Pat Flynn.
Fair lad.
Yeah, yeah. And he rides Iron Superman all the time, and and then you've all the other lads that have been racing a long time. You've Robbie Smithers, that was apprenticed to Michael Halford, and there's loads of lads there, and they're all going to give out to me in the morning now, because not mentioning them all, but there's plenty of them there, and they all do a great job.
Siobhan, a racing background?
A racing background, no. Was into horses most of her life, but racing, no.
You've achieved so much. Married at 20 what?
Married at 29 last
29.
Year.
29, married in his 20s, which few people do nowadays. You've trained horses to run places in classics, and he's going to tell us his good thing for the Galway Festival as well, after he tells us about his four horses that are in Royal Ascot.
Do you have a top hat yet?
I have.
Yeah. The mad thing about this Royal Ascot is you're going over there with a lot of rain prior to that, and possibly soft ground for the Coventry and so on Tuesday.
Yeah, they've got 60 mil of rain during the week, like a month and a half's worth of rain in one day.
But I suppose at least you know what it is. You're not kind of, are they going to water the course? Is it, you know what
you're
getting?
We were talking on the way in that the forecast for Cork tonight was completely inaccurate. So like, what were you saying? There was
15 mil of rain due for today in Mallow.
And they got less than one.
And they got less than one, yeah.
Just briefly on that, the weather, we spoke about this briefly on the way in. I think as a trainer, it would be something that I'd be awfully concerned about, because if you're trying to plan some, How would you know what the ground is going to be like in Galway, for example? Not a clue.
Yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare, but it's part of it, and it's frustrating, but it's completely out of your control. And that's one of the things that makes Irish racing so difficult and so competitive. It's not like English racing in this, that it's not diluted. You haven't got four or five flat race fixtures a day. You've three a week.
I think it's great for that. It's proper competitive.
It's the most competitive race.
Winning a race means something. Yeah. Not winning a three-runner race at Hexham. Winning a race means something.
Yeah, and that's why the prize money is so good, and because it's so hard to win a race in Ireland. And then outside of that, the weather is so unpredictable. You could have, like what you said earlier, you could have a good thing, and you could be waiting a long time to get his ground, and by that stage you could be gone off the boil or have got injured or something. It's difficult. It's part of training in Ireland. It's what makes it so competitive.
Will you have a win on Royal Ascot?
We'll try anyway, but it is the most competitive racing in the world. A lot of people refer to it as kind of the Olympics of horse racing. It's just so competitive. There's no point being unrealistic about it. It is very, very difficult place to win. We've the closest we've come is finishing fourth in the Coronation. But
what's it like? I've never been to Royal Ascot. What's it like?
It's completely different to anything else. There's an amazing atmosphere there.
So like the flat Cheltenham.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say it's different.
Is it pompous or is it more everyone is out having a few pints?
I have to be careful because I'm going over there next week and I don't want to...
You get booed in the winter.
Yeah, party. Yeah, yeah. But no, it's not really. It's an experience. It's enjoyable.
It's part of the... it's their
fabric.
It's their identity, isn't it? So you know that, okay, we're going to be dressed up to the nines with the top hat and tails and the ladies can be very dressed well. It's just part of the... I don't think
it's the royal thing as well. Like when Michael was on about the Rose of Tralee used to be wheeled into Tralee, like that'd be more my scene than the actual monarch being wheeled in. But that is part of the, you know, the national anthem and fairness to the Queen. She loves her race.
Yeah, yeah. No,
the Queen is. I like the Queen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just part of, like, if you stripped all that back and you just had the race in it, you know, everything has to have its quirk.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's a big show, essentially. Yeah.
Tell us about your quartet next week.
Yeah, there's 3 2-year-olds. Red Epaulette, who won the first 2-year-old maiden of the year, very impressively at Naas. Stepped him up to 6th and second him out, and he bumped into Siskin. We made plenty of use of him that day. And
Siskin's a lovely horse. He's going to Royal Ascot as well, I think.
Yeah, Siskin's probably the highest rated time form, highest rated 2-year-old in Ireland this year. So he happened to bump into him, and that's what you bump into. And
that's not even Aidan O'Brien then.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. It's Gerard Lyons, and he's such a strong team, and there's so many other trainers with such strong teams. I bumped into him that day and dropped him back to 5 again at Naas, Royal Ascot Trials Day. And in sort of a muddling race, bumped into Pistoletto and, you know, only went down ahead. And I took a lot of encouragement out of that because it was a muddling race. And I do think that the fast 5 at Royal Ascot will really suit him. It's on Wednesday, the Windsor Castle is what he runs in. And the ground should still be the slow side of good come that, but Ascot dries amazingly quick. They have got a lot of rain this week and they're raining again today, but it's to be dry over the weekend, it's to be dry next week, so the ground will probably just be the slow side of good. But I think he'd run a big race. He could run the race of his life and finish 6th or 7th. It's Royal Ascot. It's we've gone in there with no illusions, but he's a good horse with a lot of natural speed, and I think he's in the form of his life, and I think he'll run well.
You could back him to finish in the first 5 or 6, something like that, a good price. Yeah. And you've 4 altogether, haven't you?
Yeah, we've 2 2-year-old fillies going as well. Laura Lee Rock, who won first time out at Naas, not having that hard a race. The horse of Joseph's that finished 2nd Air Force Jet came out and won again, and he's gone to Royal Ascot. And she didn't have a hard race that day and went to Tipperary then for her 2nd start and bumped into Sunday Sovereign. The favourite.
Yeah, I mentioned Paddy Toomey.
Yeah, yeah, the favourite for the Norfolk. And he's as good a 2-year-old as I've seen in Ireland this year, on a par with Siskin. You know, Siskin's probably the best 6 furlong horse, and Sunday Sovereign's possibly the best 5 furlong horse, and, you know, we've bumped into the both of them. But
just on that as well, like, everyone says, oh, you know, Aidan O'Brien and Coolmore, they're dominating all this. But you're mentioning taking on Joseph O'Brien, taking on Paddy Toomey, taking on Ger Lyons. We've Lady Kaya sadly lost to the Lavery operation this week. Last year, we had Ken Condon win the Guineas. We had Patrick Prendergast winning a Grade 1, a Group 1 on Champions Weekend. There's an awful lot of young talent out there. I don't think people, like, even you see Champions Weekend, how much of a spread there was in terms of winners the last couple of years. Yeah. There's a lot of young talent out there that isn't Aidan O'Brien.
Yeah, and you've the likes of Willie McCreary and Fozzie Stack and Jim Bulger. You know, there's plenty of trainers there that, given the ammunition, can get the best out of horses. Mm. And it's just ultra competitive.
Your other 2-year-old then?
Isabel.
She's unbeaten, isn't she? Only run the once.
Unbeaten, yeah. Only run the once. I haven't run her again to get her beat. But she's a good, fast filly. She had a little bit of a hold-up for about 6 weeks, and she still exercised away, but put on quite a bit of weight, and went quite lazy in her work. And the morning of the declarations for Down Royal, I remember from before, Down Royal is an extremely difficult place for a 2-year-old because it's a bit like a roller coaster. It's up, down, around, across a road. They're turning all the time, and from the minute they come out the gate, they're running downhill. And said to stick the blinkers on her just to give her that bit of help, just to focus. She won quite impressively. And what I was saying about her being a little bit sick, through the spring. She didn't have a great prep for that race, and she's come out of the race very well and improved a lot. So will that make her good enough to feature in the Queen Mary? I don't know, but she's equally as good and as quick as Laurelie Rock, and they're two quite fast 2-year-old fillies that wouldn't be going there unless I thought they had a chance.
She's by Cable Bay, so how did that come about that you sourced her?
Bought her at the yearling sales in Goffs. She was about 30 grand, and just a lovely filly. I remember the stallion racing. I remember being second in the Dewhurst's by Invincible Spirit out of a Dictat mare, and he was a very, very good looking horse.
How important is that in terms of the progeny and putting implant, like obviously getting the stock actually looking like the stallion in terms of getting those qualities physically?
Yeah, a lot of the old boys would say that a stallion that stamps their stock is a very good sign. Mm. But there's no rules or laws to it. But she was a nice filly. She was well made and good moving filly, and we liked her and bought her as a yearling, and she's a nice fast 2-year-old filly. She had a pivotal mare, which would help as well. And if she doesn't win at Royal Ascot, I can see her picking up a bit of black type before the summer is out, because she's quite a fast filly.
If you have the choice of taking a punt in a first season stallion or a second or third or fourth season stallion that's gone a little bit unfashionable, what would you do?
Probably if the horse was nice enough, it wouldn't matter what they're by. Mm. But them stallions that are gone a little bit cold, if there's things about them that you like, or maybe you've noticed about that maybe they're getting a bit of a hard rap because, you know, things haven't quite gone that fashionably for them.
Yeah.
Which a lot of it is, a lot of it's fashion, and you can make your own opinions, and and sometimes find an edge if you make your own opinion, whether it's punting or buying horses or breeding them or whatever. It's all about your own opinion, because
going against the tide at times.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. There's no law.
John, have you looked a few races at the weekend?
It's not the best weekend, to be honest. And I think when you got Royal Ascot coming up, you know, you're not going to get it every day, and that's sometimes what makes the big meeting special. So, Mekong, the ground has come from at York in an Ebor trial tomorrow at 3:00. Ryan Moore, Michael Stout. Keep it simple, Mekong to win at 3:00 in York tomorrow.
That's your nap.
That's the bet.
I'll briefly go through a few races in Limerick. The 250, I think Limerick the ground is yielding, but presumably with rain to come. Shorestep, who's by Footsteps in the Sand, who's a stallion of I Am Superman. Cracking stallion, I think, actually.
Yeah, very underrated.
Yeah.
Footsteps in the Sand?
Yeah.
And he won the 2000 Guineas, didn't he?
Yeah.
Fallon rode him.
Yeah, he was a famous story, because first time out he was running against a horse called Olympic, who cost about 4 million, and Jamie Spencer was riding Footsteps in the Sand. Who was the nominal second string, and he was back in 20s into something like 4 or 5 to 1, I think, at Nace, and he absolutely bolted up. But he was quirky, and Fallon apparently was amazing on the gallops with him, because he wasn't the easiest, but I love him as a stallion, I have to say. But he's Shorestep's stallion. And that is in the 250 at Limerick tomorrow for Johnny Murta, another very, very promising young trainer who trains up the Curragh as well. The 3:00 at York as well is a race to look at. As John said, it is a quiet weekend in both Britain and Ireland. And strangely enough, the racing has actually been quite decimated in terms of the weather in Britain this week, which is quite bizarre considering we're in June. But that's how it's going at the moment anyway. This is a listed race at York with a few interesting runners. Mekong, a Frankel horse, is a 4-year-old, is going to be the hot favourite. Could take a bit of beating. Have you had any Frankels?
No.
No. What would you say if somebody were to offer you one?
No problem. I'll take him. He's a very, very good stallion.
Are they a little bit quirky?
I don't know. Just from the outside looking in, they look to have a lot of talent, and there looks to be plenty of good ones, which is a good sign. I know he's got some very good mares, but they're able to win at any distance.
Who'll do better as a stallion, him or Camelot?
So far, I would say, on the evidence, I would say Frankel, but Camelot's got plenty of good horses, and went a little bit quiet in his first year, which was nothing to worry about, because they were bred to be 3-year-olds, and we've a nice Camelot at home that we think plenty of, and he'll be out later in the year. And
that's your Galway good thing, is it?
I don't know. Maybe Galway might be a bit the intricacies of Galway. He's a big horse.
And, give us a name, Michael.
Something
for Galway. Something for even before that. Something to look out for.
Well, for those watching in live today, my friend Stan has a good chance in the 3 o'clock in Ferry House where I'm going, or the 5:25 at Ferry House.
That's very good of you. In fairness, you're rewarding the loyal 3 o'clock listeners.
Yeah.
You listening? Are you watching this?
Yeah.
My friend Stan.
Yeah. And I actually do think that it's going to be a very, very competitive race. But I think the jersey next Saturday, I'm Superman, has a big each way show, because he's the best he's ever been. He's come out with the Curragh well. He's improved again, which is, you know, it's hard to say that he's improved again, but he I think he has, because, you know, he didn't get a lot of racing at two, and he's coming to himself now. I think a strong 7 furlongs there in Ascot will suit him.
But the jersey, 3-year-old race, 7 furlongs only, nearly perfect for him. The Tote.com customers can also enjoy the Tote versus SB best price guarantee in all Royal Ascot racing next week. So very important to get the guaranteed odds, because there will be obviously market fluctuations. The last race I'm going to mention is the big race at Goran Park. Beautiful racetrack in County Kilkenny. Just to mention, hard luck lads against Galway last Sunday, but you gave it a good go. No harm being beaten by the better team, but might meet you again later on in the season. I've actually forgotten what I'm going to tip here now, giving a bit of digs to the got a great welcome in Kilkenny, to be fair, John. Nolan Park, lovely place to go.
You got the welcome. Yeah. They spotted you immediately.
I wouldn't say that now, but they're friendly people down in Kilkenny and they love their hurling.
I suppose they weren't expecting their first beating there in 70 years.
No. Do you like the hurling?
I actually watched that match, but no, I don't follow much outside the race.
Yeah, but you're a bit more, you're a round enough individual though. It's not all about racing. Anything else at all? Very interesting.
There's loads. I go from one thing to the next. I can't stick to anything. Racing is the main thing though.
And you have the red and blue silks. Why did you make that choice?
They're dads. Dad's Michael as well, and often we get mixed up. He's the biggest supporter of mine, and I think maybe my mother just liked the idea of navy and red together, and he picked them. But yeah, I know what, they've been lucky for us.
At a bit of a hot shot maybe in that race, but I'm going to go with Johnny Murtagh's Guess the Bill. But we're going to mention the Nap of the Week now. Our Tote Irish Inter Jockeys Fund earnings currently at €4,989, €11 shy of €5,000. Can this week's €100 charity bet nudge it over the €5,000 mark? And I will give the bet as riding in the 6:15 at Limerick, trained by Tom Hogan. Very good run last time in Lasalle. I don't think this horse has any more to do here. Great each way bet. I think if you can get an each way price. And Tom Hogan still going strong in the flat with his runners, including Gordon Lord Byron. On Tuesday, the Tote will sponsor the full race card for Supporters Day at Sligo Racecourse. I might even be there myself. Second most scenic racetrack in Ireland, probably.
Where's
after
that?
After Killarney, Sligo.
Yeah, it's a lovely track, very scenic. Another lovely country track is Goran Park.
That'd actually probably be third. If you're in Sligo on Tuesday evening, be sure to go along and enjoy the racing. Find out more on the Tote.com. The Tote.com customers, as I said, can enjoy the Tote versus SB price guarantee on all racing at Ascot, Royal Ascot next week. That is Friday Night Racing, brought to you by GoRacing.ie. Just finally, what are your ambitions left?
Keep training plenty of winners, train a group one winner, which is the pinnacle of it. But just keep training plenty of winners and trying to find good horses, and keep the head above water.
Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
Thanks JD.
Thank you.
And enjoy the weekend, and plenty of winners over the 6 meetings in Ireland.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.